The question has to be asked as to why it is that many long-term meditators still experience difficulties with negative emotions, when you might suppose that after many years of practice, they would have at least come to terms with their psychological problems. You might suppose that perhaps they haven't practiced deeply or intensively enough to affect the deep-seated problematic behaviour patterns. So maybe they are better off doing some psychotherapy or having counselling to get some insight into their problems. If that is the case, then it is rather ironic when you consider that many Buddhist meditation techniques are now being incorporated into psychotherapies, such as cognitive behaviour therapy and even mindfulness practice itself. To understand the problem as to why long-term practitioners are still having to deal with psychological difficulties, we have first to make the distinction between mental disorders, that is, clinical conditions such as psychosis, schizophrenia, bipolar disorders, and on the other hand, unwholesome negative behaviour or predispositions that are detrimental to oneself as well as harmful to others with whom one is in relationship with. Then, being clear that we are dealing with the mind's unwholesome predispositions and not clinical conditions, we need to examine them in depth and learn how to work with them from the perspective of meditation practices, especially Vipassana meditation. Unfortunately, it is not so uncommon that many people experience these ingrained unwholesome patterns of mind that are harmful to their well-being and don't seem to know how to work with them. However, while we have to acknowledge that although it is not an easy matter, it is possible through Vipassana meditation to detoxify the mind just as it is possible to detoxify the body. The mental poisons or pollutants of the mind are known in Buddhist teachings as the three poisons of greed, hatred, and ignorance. Often they are expanded to a set of seven that includes sensual desire, aversion, wrong view, doubt, conceit, craving for existence, as well as ignorance. They also referred to as the latent tendencies or predispositions of the mind. These latent tendencies lie dormant in the mind and are the source of one's addictions and deep clinging, holding the mind in a state of attachment and, as a result, in suffering. In order to understand what is going on in regarding to these latent tendencies, we have to take into account the biological underpinning of the mind, the brain. Now, certainly, you can get about using your mind without knowing how your brain works, which is analogous to driving a car or using a computer but not knowing how it works. That might be all right as you are just a user, but with some knowledge based on the actual functioning of the brain's mechanism, then one has the potential to significantly deepen one's insights. In Buddhist literature, there is only mention of the brain as an organ in the asubhas, which is a meditation practice of the recitation of the 32 parts of the body. Actually, the brain is not even mentioned in the original texts. There were just 31 parts. The 32nd, or the brain, is later inserted in the commentaries. Nothing was known of the brain's function in ancient times, as there was not the technology and the knowledge that we have today. Even the location of the mind was in doubt. More often than not, it was thought to be the heart, often referred to as the heart-mind. The ancient Greeks also had much the same notion as well. Neuroscience, with its use of magnetic resonant imaging, MRI, is a fairly new technology that has been used only since the beginning of the 1980s that has revolutionized our understanding of the brain. Now we can also map the brain's functioning as it is happening with functional MRI scanning. The very recent discovery of the brain's plasticity opens up the possibility of the brain that changes itself. which contradicts the old established neuroscientific dogma that the adult brain is unchanging, fixed, hardwired. So if we seek the likely source of the latent tendencies within the brain, we need also to be familiar with the limbic system and its function that affects emotions and memory. The limbic system, or the limbic areas, are a group of structures in the brain that includes the amygdala and the hippocampus. These are important for controlling the emotional response to a given situation. What is relevant to us here is that the Buddhist understanding of the possibility of mental transformation and healing has parallel in the plasticity of the brain, which now has found and proven to be a very pliable organ. So we now know that the brain can be changed through repetition or consistent practice. The therapeutic benefits found in neuroplasticity comes about through practice, which presupposes mental effort and focused attention that intensifies the practice. What are these but the meditation skills in the core teachings of the Buddha's Eightfold Path of Practice? Generally, we do not suspect or are even aware of the latent tendencies of the mind. As a meditator, I personally became acutely aware of these hidden tendencies of the mind during a year's intensive Vipassana meditation retreat in Burma, when, in spite of sustained attentiveness and without consciously controlling or suppressing the mind, unwholesome material kept surfacing. For example, anger would continually flare up month after month, even though I was in silence and was not relating with anyone except the teacher. Although, when the mind developed one-pointed concentration, these dormant tendencies that had been manifesting were suppressed. But that was not the desired outcome, as I was trying to follow the pure or bare Vipassana approach that avoids the blocking effect that results from fixed concentration. With the benefit of many years of meditation practice, I would say now that strategically it is useful, even necessary, to employ the inhibiting effect of one-pointed concentration meditation, such as loving-kindness, to help pacify the mind during Vipassana meditation, as long as it doesn't interfere with the cathartic effect that comes with pure moment-to-moment awareness. One needn't be afraid of any turbulence that arises in Vipassana meditation, as it is an essential part of the cleansing and healing process that purifies the mind and leads to insights into the three marks of existence, of change, distress, and impersonal mental processes. Now, can I ask you to do some radical reflection on these latent tendencies, as an understanding of them is crucial in dealing with the ongoing difficulties that plague the mind? First, one needs to be truly honest with themselves and accept the fact of their presence together with the knowledge of how they are activated. Then one is ready to undergo the cleansing process, the purification of mind in Vipassana meditation, which eventually leads to the healing and transformation that ultimately frees one from mental suffering. The latent tendencies are inbuilt tendencies. It is known that babies have them at birth. So everybody has them to some degree or other. Perhaps we can say they are our karmic inheritance, something like our genes. But don't suppose that the latent or underlying tendencies need be there forever, that they are everlasting, or that we are fated to their effects. As it is a universal truth that everything changes, so we need not get stuck in conditioned patterns of the mind, as we have the potential to decondition the mind and be free. There was an American politician who won an election with the slogan, "It's the economy, stupid." Buddhists would say, "It is the mind, stupid," as it is the mind that is the source of self-inflicted suffering, or you might say, stupid suffering. So we identify the mind as a source of suffering, and the root latency of the mind is the latency to ignorance. This tendency to ignorance forms the foundation for the latency to craving, which is the tendency to get attached to identify with things. We are very much inclined to identify with one belief system or another, seeking certainty and relentlessly pursuing the myth of security, while not being knowing of the wisdom of insecurity. One of the deeply conditioned latent tendencies of the mind is the attachment to concepts while taking them for realities. It is the tendency to get attached to concepts per se without understanding them for what they are in themselves, as just something that someone has thought up or has been able to imagine. There is an ingrained tendency to grab hold of the concept in worldly usage, to cling to them tenaciously and to identify with them. We assume that the words and concepts we use have a reality of their own, that they are true in their own right, even going to the extreme of waging a war of words over ideas, over some ideology. As the latent tendencies lie dormant in the mind below the conscious level, the question is, what triggers them? Or what causes them to surface? As far as I know, there are two ways that this happens. During the play of emotions, when the mind state is coloured by the unwholesome latent tendencies, which tends to reinforce them. Or during the process of perception, when there is a thought and then conceptual proliferation. In whatever way they find expression, the latent tendencies are activated unconsciously in the mind, and that is why they are so difficult to control, even when they are continually cut down, but without unrooting them by concentration-based meditations. There is a verse by the Buddha in the Dhammapada that illustrates this. If its roots remains undamaged and strong, a tree, even if cut, will grow back. So too, if latent craving is not rooted out, this suffering returns again and again. A model of the mind used to explain Buddhist practice has the mind in three layers. The top is the express level, where restraint or precepts are used to inhibit expressions of unwholesome emotions. The middle is a manifest level where unwholesome thoughts are pacified or temporarily inhibited through concentration-based meditations such as loving-kindness, while the bottom level is where the latent tendencies lie, which are only accessed and eliminated or purified through insighting, inseeing into the process of the mind itself. In various forms of awareness-based meditations, such as Vipassana. A simile used to illustrate this is that of a sleeping snake, that is, the dormant level, who when provoked rises up in anger, that is, the manifest level, and then strikes, that is, the express level. So you can see that while we use restraint to block the anger and loving-kindness meditation to change the climate of the mind, the latent tendencies remain dormant until the purification processes during Vipassana meditation releases the dormant material. And as long as one does not play back into the content of the mind, that when there is a non-reactive awareness, then this deconditions and cleanses the mind of the latent tendencies. Another possibility of accessing the latent tendencies is by intercepting them during the process of perception. But this presupposes that the practitioner can increase the perceptual threshold level. Perceptual thresholds are levels where subtle or fast processes can be observed. Below the threshold, the process is not observed, and above the threshold, the process is observed. In a study in the Insight Meditation Society in Barre, Massachusetts, after a 3 months intensive Vipassana retreat in 1984, the perceptual threshold of meditators increased as much as 100% or more. This showed that it is possible to substantially increase one's rate of perception and thus the perceptual threshold at least in intensive Vipassana meditation practice. The latent tendencies lie dormant in the mind, becoming activated during the perceptual process, through contact or during a sense impression at any of the six sense doors, that is, the five senses, seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting and touching, and the processes of the mind itself. The process of perception is normally experienced as a conditioned sequence and functions in this way. With contact, via feelings and cognition, which are a pair, thought arises, which in turn stimulates conceptual proliferation. The conceptual proliferation can in turn give rise to further concoctions and biased cognitions, which lead from the original sense data to all kinds of associations. Once the stage of conceptual proliferation is reached, though, the course is set. So allowing that the perceptual threshold is above the norm, one could be clearly knowing during the stages of cognition and initial conceptual reaction with close attentiveness, and so is free of the condition sequence. Insight, and therefore reduced suffering, are the result of a change in perceptual thresholds that allow access to previously unconscious mental processes. These processes, though, are beyond the perceptual threshold of the normal person. The most difficult latent tendency to root out is that of sensual desire. In Buddhist practice, there needs to be at least a degree of renunciation and restraint for people who are practicing. While this can be challenging, it helps to have a supportive environment, such as a retreat environment. It is perhaps, though, not for everybody, as this is certainly going against the stream of worldly life. Supportive conditions with a qualified teacher in a Vipassana retreat will help one to cut the roots of defilement in the mind and expose the unconscious processes of the mind and make them conscious. The way given by the Buddha to do this is through Satipatthana Vipassana meditation, when one focuses the mind in a profound examination of the present moment processes of the mind, which, though not known or accessible to normal consciousness, allows these processes to become conscious. Unconscious processes become conscious processes. It is like switching a light on in a dark room, so that which was unseen becomes seen, which is a symbol commonly used in the discourses for enlightenment. So, regardless of which sense object is focused on, sight, sound, smell, taste, touch, or processes of the mind itself, the sense object becomes a projection screen for observing the fundamental processes of consciousness, which brings about the stilling of the mind and a deep transformation of consciousness itself.